The last few years has seen a rise in the number of independent films that mix comedy, romance, and drama to explore relationships and life transitions in a manner that connects with our real-life experiences. Often directed by emerging filmmakers, these films display a command of nuance that seems to escape their big-budget competitors. A case in point, the 2013 indie film Kilimanjaro. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Writer-director Walter Strafford's debut feature film, Kilimanjaro, is now available on iTunes for rental and purchase and lists among its credits a filmmaker with close ties to El Paso, Ryan Pierce Williams. Williams is a multi-talented filmmaker and producer of Kilimanjaro, and I'm delighted to have him on the program today. Good morning.
Hey, Charles. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us. I know you're working and finishing up your own film, so I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. You're joining us by phone from New York. Congratulations, first off, on Kilimanjaro, official selection of last year's South by Southwest film selection. I know you've been to a number of other festivals with this film. Tell me how you got involved with this project. Many people here on the border will know you as an El Paso native, and just not too many years ago, you were the writer-director of your own first feature film, The Dry Land. So you're a producer now on this film. How did that evolve?
You know, it was kind of a natural evolution. I went to film school at USC, and at USC we learned how to produce, how to write, how to direct, pretty much how to do everything. And so I kind of have always loved to do every aspect of the process. And so when I was sent the script for Kilimanjaro, I really loved it. And I realized that, you know, it wasn't a script that I necessarily wanted to direct myself, but I wanted to help somebody else bring it to life. So I met with the writer-director, Walter Strafford, and together we were able to develop it and get it into a place where we were then able to find the financing and get the cast attached and, you know, really get the ball rolling. But ultimately it came down to me connecting with the script and wanting to be a part of it and see it happen.
Well, let's talk a little about that script and the story. If you could describe briefly kind of what Kilimanjaro is about.
Sure, yeah. It's set in Brooklyn, and it's about a guy who's in his late 20s, basically going through a really terrible relationship breakup in his life, and he decides that he's going to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And so the movie kind of follows him as he prepares for this climb. And as he gets more and more prepared to climb the mountain, his past relationship starts to catch back up with him and complicate things. And he has to make a big life choice. And it's kind of a metaphor in life for those big choices that we have to make that hold consequences on each side of whatever choice you're making. So it's a very nuanced piece. It's a very character-driven piece. And I think it's a story that a lot of people can relate to in their life when they're trying to make these big decisions about following your dreams or following the person that you truly love in your life. And sometimes those two things conflict in a way, you know?
Yeah, it's a marvelous tale of that I think most people have experienced themselves. You know, it's sort of the late summer of life where the characters are all in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're in that phase where, you know, college is already becoming a memory and their first jobs have kind of solidified
yeah.
and their first major relationships are at that moment where you decide to commit or not. And, you know, they're right on the brink of maybe what will be the rest of their life set in a certain pattern. And the different characters deal with that differently. But the main character, who's played by Brian Garrity, who some people will remember from The Hurt Locker, He's really rudderless in this film, and you can feel him being tossed back and forth between the influences of a best friend, a former girlfriend, and his parents. I'm getting to the age where I can begin to appreciate the parents' perspective. But
yeah.
I get a lot of films sent to me every year to look at, and it seems in the last few years there's a lot more of these types of films coming up, which is refreshing, which are films that are dealing with the substance of everyone's lives in a very naturalistic, what I would term naturalistic way. They're not over-amplified, or the characters are all extremely real, and the entry point into the film is pretty easy for viewers. Being a shall we say, a filmmaker of a certain age, a youthful age, and have your own entourage there in New York of filmmakers in that same age group. Is that something you feel like generationally is bubbling up, that return to story-driven films about real life, or is this just a niche or a fluke these last few years?
No, I definitely think that it's, I guess it is a trend, but I wouldn't say it in kind of the negative sense.
Yes.
I think it's a real desire. What I see is there's a real desire to tell more subtle stories that reflect, you know, parts of the human experience that are more nuanced and maybe not as grand as cinema has been in the past. And I think that partly has happened because of the technology and the accessibility of the technology, and, you know, how much easier it is to now make a movie than, say, it was in the 90s or even before then. So I feel like there's a lot of filmmakers that have a desire to tell really subtle character-driven films. And yes, I think that the technology makes it easier to do that. So more people are able to make films, whereas in the past they might not have had the resources to do so. What's great about independent cinema, and I think it's kind of seeping into bigger mass cinema, if you will, a little bit more, is this exploration of kind of the gray areas and the more ambiguous areas of life that are more difficult to explore on film. But it seems that audiences are really interested in seeing those kind of the stories as well. You can see that reflected in the television shows that are out now, and especially on cable. There's a lot more gray area than maybe there was in the past, where you would have like a good character and a bad character. It's interesting to watch a character that is more complex, that you don't know if they're good or bad, and you can relate with them in some ways, but not in other ways. So,
and in the case of Kilimanjaro, you have a main character who's, there are no bad decisions per se, there are simply decisions, and he has to choose what his rationale for those decisions are, and it runs the spectrum between appeasing the expectations of his parents to being responsible to seeking out his own life path. It's not that any one is better or worse than another, but he's at an age, as most late 20-somethings or early 30-somethings are, where they're really having to choose what the rest of their life's going to be about.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, that's a moment I think, you know, a lot of people have in their life where they really have to make a choice of what direction they want to go in. And either direction has consequences, either for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Kilimanjaro is basically a big exploration of that moment in this guy's life. So I think that it's a moment that a lot of people can relate to in general, even if you're not a young 30-year-old in Brooklyn, you know?
No, I think having lived through that stage of life, I was certainly relating to the main character, but also to the other generations in the film, because I sense those same pressures on me at a certain time in life. And, you know, I think it's a film that's extremely accessible to a wide age range of viewers. The messiness of the unknown as sort of a category of subject that's coming into it, independent films. And I think in terms of Kilimanjaro, where you have elements of comedy and romance and drama genre, there are moments in there where you think, okay, I've seen this film before. I know, you know, he's going to get back with so-and-so, or he's going to make it to Kilimanjaro, and, you know, he's going to renew his life. And yet the film, time and again, sort of diverts from what our expectations are from having watched so many sort of Hollywood comedy romance dramas, and that it's refreshing. And again, it's placing that film, I think, within the context of a lot of great independent films that are bubbling up right now, your work included, that as you yourself have had to make some choices in your life, obviously you made the choice to produce on this film. I'm wondering if you could describe a little bit just what producing is, because I get a lot of questions from people about the different roles on a movie, and most people know what a director does, and most people know what a cinematographer does, but when I get questions about what a producer is, people are all over the map of what that means.
Yeah, no, and it's a very difficult job to explain, because it can have so many different meanings, you know, but the core kind of job description of a producer is, in like the purest sense, is basically the person who makes the movie happen. What that entails is finding the script, finding the director, finding the money, finding the cast, finding the key, you know, finding the key crew people. And now when I say finding the cast, it's obviously in conjunction with the director, and also finding the crew is in conjunction with the director. But the essential responsibility of a producer is to really find all of the elements that will make the movie happen.
Put the team together.
Exactly. And that's the purest sense of what a producer does. And it carries a lot of responsibility, and ultimately they're responsible for the film. Now, where it gets muddied up is that so many people get producer credits that actually don't do any of the work for various reasons. You know, there's kind of a trend in independent movies right now, and I would say probably in studio movies as well, that if a financier puts in a hefty amount of money, they'll demand a producer credit. Their contribution might be to just bring the financing, but they then don't necessarily do anything beyond that. And there's also times where an assistant or a manager or somebody who has helped brought one element to the table demands a producer credit for whatever element they're bringing to the table, whether it be cast or the director or the screenwriter. And so a lot of times people get producer credits, you know, they might not have actually done much work, but did do bring some kind of major contribution in that the main producer, whoever that is, felt like it was okay to give them a credit. The one way that you can really tell nowadays who did the most work, there's a guild called the Producers Guild of America. And right. What they've started to do is they've started to give out their stamp of approval, and they'll attach it to the producers on the movie that did the most work, and you'll see it in the credits. You won't see it necessarily in independent films as much as probably studio films, because independent films, a lot of the producers are not in the Producers Guild. But on bigger movies, if you're watching the credits and you see the PGA logo at the end of somebody's name, then they've been certified through the Producers Guild and kind of gone through a series of checks and balances to say they actually did, you know, what the job of a producer is. Does that make sense?
No, it does, and I think people will have noticed that new PGA stamp behind a lot of names just in the last 6 months on films. They just began in 2013 doing that, and I know that's a new initiative of theirs, to really increase awareness of what producing means and kind of rein in the proliferation of producers on shows now. Do you, being a writer-director yourself, does that make you a better producer?
Definitely, and vice versa. It works two different parts of my brain, you know, writing and directing and producing, they go hand in hand and require different skill sets. And, you know, the more I learn about producing, the more suited I am to write and direct, and vice versa. I mean, if I'm writing a script and I have the hat of a producer on, I can, not that I always let it influence what I'm writing, but I can definitely be aware of the fact that I'm going to have to actually achieve this at some point. And so I should know whether or not it's possible to achieve it. Just because it's on the page doesn't mean it's going to translate on the screen unless I know how we're actually going to get there. And so the more experience I have as a producer, the more I feel like I'm able to kind of really keep that in mind as I'm directing and writing. I also have found a great value in working with other writer-directors. As a producer, when you're working with another writer-director, you really get an insight into how somebody else works creatively, and that has been a really invaluable experience for me to work with other writer-directors and just see how they work and learn from their techniques and take that into my own work as a writer-director.
Sounds like a great feedback loop. I know you've written and directed your next picture, and it's, I guess, finishing production now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. We're just wrapping up post-production right now on my feature. It's called XY. We'll be done with it in March, and then it will start appearing on the festival loop sometime in the spring. It's a relationship drama set in New York that follows four different characters, and it's told in chapters, so you follow each character in their own kind of section, and all of the people's stories cross, they all intersect, and affect each other in different ways. But it's really kind of a look at modern relationships in New York and really investigates all these characters that are struggling to find a real connection in their life. The movie stars America Ferrera. I'm also in it. There's a gal named Melanie Diaz who was in Fruitvale Station this last year. Common, the rapper Common is in it, and Amber Tamblyn and Dree Hemingway. So we have, it's a fantastic cast. It's a small independent film that we made here in New York, but we're really proud of it, and I'm really eager to get it out there in the world.
Well, I look forward to seeing it, and hopefully we get it here near El Paso soon as well.
Definitely.
I want to thank you for speaking with us today about your production on the film Kilimanjaro. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Charles.
My guest today has been El Paso native Ryan Piers Williams, producer on the recently available 2013 film Kilimanjaro and writer-director of the upcoming feature XY. Kilimanjaro is available for rental and purchase on iTunes, and you can learn more about the film at KiliMovie.com. That's KiliMovie.com. A final program note, the Sunset Film Society will be screening the 1936 film Dodsworth, starring Walter Huston and Ruth Chatterton, tonight at 6:30 p.m. Please make note that the Sunset Film Society will meet tonight at a temporary venue, Trinity First United Methodist Church, at 801 North Mesa, and admission is free of charge. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.